Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Amin Al-Hassan, Meadowlark Media and Cinephobe and 12 other things that probably are way better than what he's about to do with us. Amin, welcome.
Hey, Ray. How's it going?
Same old gut-wrenching nightmares, and you?
all is well in the world then, huh? Everything's normal.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are normal, let's then not talk about the Western Conference because that's way not normal. And this weekend was even less normal than ever before. Do you make anything of the fact that all of a sudden now that it's past the All-Star break and the regular season has truly started, that you might see more weirdness like the games we saw over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think the weirdness comes out of, quite frankly, just how else can I put it? This is parody. This is the purest form of parody I think we've had, at least in the Western Conference, in quite a while. When you say teams 1 through 13, there's not that much separation. I know the standings say there's separation. I know, you know, the records say that. But after the trade deadline and after kind of some of these pickups, in the buyout market, it's very, very compact, and there's not a whole lot of separation between these teams. So you could literally take a combination of eight teams from the 13 and say this is the playoff picture, and it kind of makes sense. Obviously, bearing in mind that Denver and Memphis are that far up in the standings, they're going to definitely be there. But when you look throughout, you know, you can't tell me confidently healthy, there's a huge difference between the Clippers at 5 and, you know, say, you know, even the Lakers all the way down at 12.
I mean, if you were a member of Dub Nation out here in the Bay and you're looking, okay, if we can get rolling, nobody's beat us, you know, in the Western Conference, we got Clay who's been balling, we got Steph. What team would you look at in the Western Conference? And if you want to go Phoenix, you can go Phoenix because we know what they just picked up in Kevin Durant. But any other team that you see right now that you think, you know what, I know the Warriors got some guys, but I think that these guys could beat the Warriors this year.
Yeah, I think the big problem with the Warriors right now is they're running out of time. Mm-hmm. You know, especially with Steph out. They're running out of time. They've been 500 kind of win one, lose one here and there, and that's well and good. But where they last in that play-in tournament, the more opportunity you are leaving the door open for something wrong to happen. And I'm not just saying something wrong in terms of another injury or whatever. I'm just saying just something wrong in terms of you lose one, you lose another one, all of a sudden you're out of it. Mm-hmm. Right? It can turn, the play-in turns on you very quickly. And you know, beyond Phoenix, man, Memphis, tough. I know they play dumb a lot. I know that poise and execution isn't there. But you know who else doesn't have poise and execution? The Golden State Warriors, right? I mean, outside of Steph, Draymond, Clay, and Kevon Looney, this is a team that plays just as wild and mercurial in terms of decision-making execution as the Memphis Grizzlies do. Because these guys, even the ones who played like Jordan Poole last year and were contributing members to a championship team, they're not there yet in terms of being able to be dependable and do the right thing. You know, playoff basketball more often than not, just are you doing the right thing? And there isn't a whole lot of margin for error there. And so that's the thing that I worry about when I watch the Warriors. I look at this and I say, first of all, they have to overcome not having Steph in the lineup for the time being. Okay, whatever. But then once they get him back, they still have to have enough games to get into a rhythm where everyone's doing things as right as possible. And I don't know if there's enough time for this young of a roster to get with that program.
So we know what Denver is. We have a pretty good idea of what Memphis is. And really everything, you know, from Phoenix on down is a pie fight. So what do you make of Sacramento then? And I presume they're not going to go for 176 again in the regular season. But they seem like the one team that nobody's willing to sort of tackle analytically or to figure out, because A, they're not supposed to be where they are, especially this late in the season, and B, they're terrible defensively, and yet it doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because we're in the regular season, and as long as we are in this, you know, you get on a plane, you play somebody, and then you forget about it, you go to the next night, it really doesn't matter. Their offense can carry them, but, you know, honestly, when it comes to the playoffs, as I said, there's two things. One of them, obviously, is defense. You got to be able to stop people, because there are going to be people who can stop you from time to time, and you're going to be able to have to weather those storms. So that's one thing. But more importantly than that, I would say, is that this team is young. Look at this roster. Outside of Harrison Barnes, and maybe, I guess Matthew Dellavedova, but he doesn't play much. Most of this rotation are guys who either never been in the playoffs or have very light playoff experience. Like Domantas Sabonis has light playoff experience. Let's be real. He hasn't played in conference finals. He's not a grizzled vet when it comes to that. And by and large, young team, their first time in the playoffs, that's an awakening, because it goes back to what I was talking about with the Warriors. You got to do things right again and again and again and again. And the teams that make mistakes, not the teams that were great offensively, some of the teams or terrible offensively, terrible defensively. The teams that made mistakes, the sort of errors that happen because you haven't been here before and you don't know how to execute, ultimately, those are the teams that fail. Memphis last year probably should have lost in the first round. The only thing that saved them was they played another team that was inexperienced and had no idea what they were doing. And so we had Memphis versus Minnesota bashing against each other's heads, one another, and just looking sloppy. And then the least sloppy among them made it through. But the reality is the playoffs are incredibly unforgiving to a young team because they just don't know what to do. The old adage is, oh, it's not my first time at the rodeo. For the Kings, it is going to be their first time at the rodeo, and this rodeo is especially rough.
Let me ask this a different way, because everything you said is obviously incredibly valid, but if you had to pick one team to watch just for fun, who would finish above Sacramento?
Oh, I mean, in the league?
Yeah, I mean, just for, you know, I don't want to know about playoff implications. I just want to watch 48 minutes of the hell with it basketball. Where would Sacramento rank?
Well, top five. Entertainment product, absolutely. They're entertaining and they're fun to watch. If you ask me who I'd have above them, it's certainly the Phoenix Suns when Kevin Durant comes back. I mean, that's just something I don't think. We've seen that kind of combination when you talk about Devin Booker and Kevin Durant with Chris Paul kind of orchestrating that. It's different from what Golden State was with Kevin Durant there. So that's very intriguing to me. Memphis is fun, man. Memphis has fun games. Though if you're a Memphis fan, I'm sure you're probably bashing your head sometimes because some of the mistakes they make. But they do it with a certain flourish. It is fun to watch. You can't deny that. But Sacramento's right up there. I think Sacramento's right up there in terms of just pure entertainment. Yeah.
I mean, it's been a very interesting year for Klay Thompson. It starts out with Charles Barkley saying what he said in terms of, oh, he's not going to be who he used to be. And then everything that went down with the Suns before Kevin Durant with the Suns. Steph Curry goes out, and now all of a sudden, Klay Thompson, he's starting to return to who we know Klay Thompson to be, at least offensively. 32 last night. He went 42 this past weekend. Are you surprised with what you're seeing from Klay? Are you happy with what you're seeing from Klay? And how much has this added to Klay's legacy?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing that, first of all, Klay is going to behave in that way because that's the way a professional athlete should behave and should think. He has to think that everybody's wrong and everybody's against him. Right? That's kind of built into being a successful pro athlete, is you have to have this kind of, I don't want to call it delusion, obviously he's a great player, but this kind of this dogmatic belief in yourself and take any sort of what's said about you that's not fully supportive as an attack and as some version of, you know, motivation for yourself. But the reality is, I mean, what he's doing is pretty remarkable. You know, these people didn't say these things about Klay absent any context, right? This guy went through two very devastating injuries back-to-back, missed a lot of time, had a lot of rust on him, and he's not a spring chicken. You know, this is a guy who's where it's like, okay, you know, he's been in the league since 2011, right? So he's 12 years into the league. He came out as a 21, 32 years old with two really bad injuries on him. And remember, people forget this. Klay, in the first, like, 7 or 8 years of his career, didn't miss a game.
Yeah.
This dude was Iron Man, right? So he's got kind of a little bit of a on him as well. But you look at what he's done since the turn of the calendar. 46% from the field and 44% from three. And it's hard not to say he's rounding into form. And that's huge for the Warriors. That's huge for them for playoff implications. They need him to be healthy, but they also need him to be effective. And not effective because of his reputation, because, hey, man, this guy still got it from night to night. They need him to be effective in a production standpoint, on a nightly basis, in a way that they thought Jordan Poole would be. Jordan Poole has been up and down. So now you desperately need someone to be that second offensive weapon alongside Steph Curry. And he's been that. But I see both sides. I see why Klay would feel hurt and use that as motivation. But I also understand people weren't just saying this, I think Klay's washed out of the blue. They said this about you for a reason. You missed 900 days or whatever it was.
Is there, in your memory, a team that was mediocre to poor defensively during a regular season, then all of a sudden became incredibly stout in the playoffs? I mean, I'm obviously referencing the Warriors here, who are giving up 118 a game, which is like the fourth worst total in the league. Is there a comp in your mind for a team that's poor defensively and then all of a sudden comes the middle of April and then they suddenly get it?
So the best example, obviously, is the Lakers' second championship with Shaq and Kobe. They were, I want to say, bottom third in the league defensively in the regular season, and then they damn near swept the entire playoffs. So that's the example everyone gives. Like, if you want to talk about the turn, you know, flip the switch team, that's them. Again, one should point out that Shaq started that year, I believe, with a toe injury, and they had all sorts of stuff. But it was a mostly veteran team that they were carrying. So they at least had demonstrated the year before that they were an elite defensive team, and they turned the switch and did it again. I want to say the Cavs, one of those years when they just got finals and got demolished by the Warriors. But one of those years, they were bad for most of the regular season, and then they picked up steam towards the end, and then the playoffs, they became very stout, to use your word, Ray. But the odds are incredibly against the Warriors. And again, I think I'd feel a lot more comfortable if this was a team full of vets, and they just, you know, for whatever reason, had injuries here, injuries there. A better question, I think this is one I got to sit down and research and look up, is what are they, 7-23 on the road?
Yeah, I was about to ask you that. But yeah, it's like the fourth worst home road record in the league.
I think you can get away with a bad defense and have a deep playoff run. Just so dominant offensively every night, and you're winning games here and there by outscoring teams. You're 7-23 on the road. And that is one, it speaks to the youth of your roster, guys that don't play well on the road. But also, man, like, I just don't know if you can overcome that. I think that's a very telling sign. If you're legit an awful team on the road, and we know you're not going to be a 1, 2, or 3 seed, so you're going to have your fair share of road games in the playoffs, that one's going to be tough to overcome. I don't know.
Yeah.
We're talking with Amin El-Hassan, who does about 12 different things. And of those 12 things, what's the thing that you would last give up if you were forced to?
Last give up? The one that pays the most.
I won't ask what that is just because it's indelicate, but I was going to guess Cinephobe, but...
I love Cinephobe. If the question was, what do I enjoy the most?
Yeah, essentially. I asked it backwards, but yeah.
You asked it to me because then it's not necessarily my enjoyment. It's about, you know, survival, basically, how I make a living. But what I enjoy the most, I do enjoy Cinephobe the most. I love it because some of these movies I've never seen before, but I've just heard of, and it's funny to kind of experience that. And then some of these movies you saw a long time ago and you remember loving, and then you watch it and you're like, wait, what is this? And then some of them are just as great as the first time you watched it. And I just enjoy that process. And then I'm fascinated by what people get surprised by, right? Where people say, wait, that movie qualifies as a bad movie? You know, so we've done, for instance, in the Sylvester Stallone catalog, we've done Rocky and we've done Rocky, what was it? Rocky IV, and we did Cobra. People, it blew their minds that Cobra would qualify for this podcast because every movie we do is 40% or less on the Rotten Tomatoes score by either the critics or the audience. So people really are mind blown when they find out that their favorite movie growing up actually is a terrible movie.
I mean, I guess it depends on what a terrible movie is. It's all subjective. I mean, one more for you here quickly. We saw Dame drop 71 last night. Donovan Mitchell did it earlier this year. We've seen some 60-point games. 21 times this year, a player has scored at least 50 points in a game. How do you explain these explosive individual performances? Do they even move you the same way? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, like 70 still obviously is pretty breathtaking. Dame last night, you know, me and all my buddies in our group chat, we were watching and tracking it. And so that was... Look, 70 is still rarefied air. I know it's happened a couple of times this season, and that hasn't happened since the days of Wilt and Elgin and those guys. But in terms of the scoring overall, 50 doesn't move me. You're right. 50 is like, oh, someone had 50. And I kind of have that attitude, and we shouldn't. But the reality is, I would say there's two reasons. One is, obviously, pace has gone up. For us, we're playing faster than we've been playing since, I want to say, the 80s. But then you factor in the three-point line, and obviously there's more opportunities to get more shots that have extra points in them. So that's one thing. But the other thing, I think we've reached a turning point in the NBA where we need to adjust backward and help defense out a little. It is so hard to play defense now in the NBA. I hate when people complain that nobody plays defense. Not that they don't. They don't want to, although there are some individuals and some teams that don't want to. Most of the time, it's like, how am I supposed to guard this? I can't touch him. And if he shoots and I'm too close to where he lands and he falls down, that's a foul too, and it's a flagrant foul and they get the ball. There are so many rules that favor the offense so drastically. It is so difficult to play defense. I looked this up earlier this year, and I have no reason to believe it's changed. Of the 25 greatest team offenses in NBA history, 20 of them have happened in the last 3 seasons. Let me say that again. Of the 25 most efficient offenses in the history of this game, talking points per possession, 20 of them have happened in the last 3 seasons.
Wow.
There's something terribly wrong if we are seeing records broken over and over and over again And again, I know why we changed the rules in 2004, whatever it was, is because we were watching wrestling. We were watching Greco-Roman wrestling, and there was a basketball involved. And that was ugly, and that wasn't good for TV. That wasn't a good product. But I think the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction now, where offense has just too much leeway, too much ease, and we need to do some things to allow the defense to have a chance. One of them, I think, is allow a little bit more physicality, more hand-checking out on the perimeter. And then the other thing I would say is the three-point line, push it back. Either push it higher above the break or get rid of the corner three altogether. But we have to be able to kind of change the dimensions of the court so that we're getting offense from different parts. And it's not just this tee-up factory from the corners every time someone tries to help on a star player.
One last one, and since you brought it up, this is what sparks it in my mind. How far back would you have to move the three-point line before Damian Lillard notices it?
Half court. I mean, we saw that at the All-Star game, right? He just pulled up casually from half court with a jump shot and made it.
Yeah, he did that last night, too.
There's going to be guys who are going to do it, right? Who are going to continue to do it, who aren't going to be moved by it. It's like when they moved the three-point line in like the mid-90s. You guys remember that? And all of a sudden, Charles Oakley shooting threes, right? And so, like, you get people who shoot, and then when they moved it back, it's like all those people who started shooting threes, they stopped. Mid-range jumpers, because it was just a little too far for them. I think the same thing happens. I think you move it back. Look, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, you know, like, these guys are not, you know, Buddy Hield. They're like, whatever, it's the same. But what happens is those guys that aren't quite that find a different way to be effective offensively, and maybe that brings back more spot up, you know, 18-footer, 20-footer jump shots, because it's not like, oh, just take a step back and it'll get an extra point for it. Like, no, it's actually two or three steps back, and maybe that's beyond the range of the vast majority of NBA players.
Amin Alhassan, who brings you Cinephobe, a job that pays him really well, and about 12 other things that he does. Thank you for your time, Amin. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ray.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.